Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us. We've got a great show for you. We're going to talk a little about fertilizing wheat in crop, so stream barring especially, we will get to today. But we'd also be happy to answer any questions you've got or talk about anything going on your farm. If you've got a question for us, it's 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so let's talk about wheat fertility just a little bit. The main reason why we ever bring up stream barring is simply because if you get too much nitrogen on early in the season, then what can sometimes happen is you have more lodging, you have more, basically, let's just call it extension of that plant when you don't really need it. So, I don't know.
A bunch more tillers coming out at various times. And well, this gets to be really tricky when you think about it, Brian. A lot of times guys will say, well, I want more tillers, and that's a good thing for me, right? It can be. Like you look at the world record wheat grower, man, you're seeing 10 or 12 tillers on every plant and with full heads. They look great.
But
the challenge with that early nitrogen app is when you've got heads that are maturing at different timings, try and spray for head scab protection. You can't. You can pick, well, okay, the lead heads are probably going to need this timing, but you're going to be a week too early or 2 weeks too early or a week too late on a lot of the other heads out there. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, but what does that have to do with me applying nitrogen too early? I would almost think I'd want to apply the nitrogen
because
early.
Because what's happening
is, then I make
is,
sure I've got every plant having ample nitrogen, not just some areas in the field have enough and others are short.
Here's the challenge with it is that by putting out a whole bunch of nitrogen early, we influence more tillering and we allow for more vegetative growth, as you mentioned. Those things are okay in and of themselves, but not necessarily okay for how you're going to manage that crop. And this was a really interesting trip I got to take about a year and a half ago. I went down to New Zealand and got to spend some time with the world record wheat grower and the world record barley grower. And they're just doing things differently. Now, I'm not suggesting everybody change everything all of a sudden here on your spring wheat or how you're managing the winter wheat that you put in last fall. But I just want you to think about this for just a minute and consider, what if I did things a little bit different? They're willing to let their wheat look a little bit yellow early in the season. They're not worried about, man, it's got to be dark green and I got to have tons and tons of nitrogen in there. No, they're worried about, how do I keep my wheat short so it doesn't tip over later in the season? And how do I get every tiller coming at the same time so that I can manage for disease appropriately where everything's at the same stage? And they're using growth hormones and those kinds of things. And I know a lot of guys will talk about palisades and this kind of thing. But anyway, they'll use some of those things to help. But it does start with that nitrogen and how they're influencing it. So they'll wait till the tillers are set. All right, we've got a determined number of tillers. Then they're going out with their bigger shot of nitrogen through the season. So a little bit different than a lot of guys are managing it here. And you may say, well, I've got too many acres to get that time just right. Maybe so. But if you're getting 200 bushel wheat instead of 50 or 100, you might want to spend the extra time. So I just looked at what Eric Watson's doing. He's got tram lines and he's making multiple passes through the field. He said one of the biggest investments he had in his farm was just getting a great self-propelled sprayer. So when it's time to roll, he can get a lot of acres done.
Okay, but the other thing, and you, Darren, you brought this up quite a bit in the past, a lot of times it's not as much excess nitrogen as it is we just get nitrogen out of balance with everything else. So nitrogen and potassium, for example, potassium's the key thing when we start talking about standability and not having the plant lodge. So in some cases, where I was going with this is, yeah, you want some nitrogen early on in the season, but even some could be too much if you don't have the right amount of potassium in that soil.
I agree with you that having things in balance is important, but I'm just saying, just managing the one nutrient, nitrogen, that's just something they were doing different. And I know as we talked to some high-yield growers in the United States too, We find differing opinions about, well, I like to get more nitrogen out ahead, and I like to save more nitrogen for later. And some of it does come down to weather. Some of it does come down to soil types. And I know you talk a lot, Brian, about our soils are heavy. We normally don't get a ton of rainfall. And boy, as you head west and as you head north, we've got even heavier soils in many cases, and we've got less rainfall. So for guys in low rainfall environments, I understand. You want to put nitrogen out there and make sure you get some moisture on it so it actually gets in the ground and gets working. So I get it. It's not ideal like we had irrigated, lighter soils, and we could just spoon feed a tiny little bit all through the year whenever we want. But still, it's something to think about. And you know, you look at the 200 bushel wheat getting raised in New Zealand, and a lot of that's being done with lower populations than what we're raising here too. So we're saving money up front on seed cost. It's just interesting looking at how different operations do things. And if you manage it closely, whether you're relying on the stream barring to be a huge amount of your nitrogen or a small amount of your nitrogen, it can be really important. It definitely can give you a good return on investment, but those recommendations are going to change a little bit depending on where you're at and what your climate is too.
So we are pretty big believers in doing some application of nitrogen later in the season. And this also goes to for the people who want more protein. We get questions all the time about protein in wheat. Well, if you want more protein in wheat, the data is pretty clear. If you just have more nitrogen available later on in the season, you have more protein. You've got to have enough nitrogen for yield, and you got to have enough nitrogen to make the protein that you want. So it's easier when you have, let's say, high organic matter soil, because you're releasing lots of nitrogen as the season is progressing. That's fine. But, you know, in terms of what are we going to do for nitrogen application, how much should I put on exactly when, we're going to talk about that all throughout the show today. And again, if you've got any questions on this or anything else that's going on your farm, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can email us, radio@agphd.com. Well, we'll continue talking fertility and wheat coming up right after this.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Ideal for herbicide applications, the Ultra Low Drifts Large Air Inducted Droplets were designed to eliminate driftable fines without sacrificing coverage. Its thick three-dimensional pattern creates multiple angles for the spray to cover the target. Hypro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. And we're talking about stream barring in wheat. Yes, nitrogen, always a big topic whenever we're talking about wheat. And today we're talking about in-season applications. Let's get to the phone lines right away. Got a really good wheat farmer up in North Dakota on right now. It's Andy. Andy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you guys for calling.
You know, when we're looking at stream barring, how big a deal is that for your farm, and how long have you been doing it?
Well, it's a pretty big deal for us. I guess we've been doing it for right around 12 years now, I believe.
All right. How did you get started? I guess what got you going with stream barring? Were you doing something else to put on nitrogen in crop, like broadcasting it, or what was your previous practice?
Well, we were putting 100% of our N on with the drill right up front, and it just kind of came down to a manpower thing. We didn't have enough people to pull anhydrous tanks at the time anymore and stuff like that. So we decided it was better off. We were better off just split applying our N. So actually, after a couple of meetings, too, listening to Phil Needham speak and stuff, kind of talked us more into it, too.
So what have you seen? What's been different? Do the plants look different? Are you seeing more or less yield? What have you liked about it?
Well, we definitely see a bump in the yield, and also it seems like the plant health seems to stay a lot better to us. We get a lot greener wheat, you know, later on in the season, June, July area.
You know, I've been on your farm. I know you've got some heavy soils that you face, and lots of challenges, no doubt, being in the north and quite a ways west too. What would you say with wheat? What have been some of the keys for you that have really turned the needle and helped you get more yield?
Well, the split applying in was a big one, and then also fungicide. That's another big one. You know, everybody used to shake their head with the price of wheat, you know, and doing the follicure over top, you know, was too expensive at the time. But anymore, it's a no-brainer. You got to do it every year, dry or even wet years.
Yeah, that price really came down on the fungicides over the years, which has been awesome. Yeah, I remember follicure used to be super expensive, and I know for us too, it was, man, I don't know if we can afford to do that. And now, yeah, like you say, when you can do stuff for $2 to $4 an acre, it really changes the game. One last question for you on the stream barring. I know we talked to a lot of farmers that say, all right, I'm broadcasting nitrogen. I'm seeing some leaf burn with that. What should growers expect with the stream bar application in terms of leaf or crop response out of that?
Well, you will get some leaf burn with it, we found, too. I mean, it all depends upon if it's hot and dry and you're trying to get it done before rain or something like that. You don't get the rain you're expected to get. You don't want to drive by it for a week after that, for sure. But it does come. It does grow out of it.
Yeah, it's been interesting. We've been doing some too in a variety of small grain crops, and it depends on if it's a windy day. It seems like we see a little bit more response. If it's not windy, we can do a pretty good job making droplets big, making the stream big enough that a lot of it's getting down to the ground. Do you find you get enough moisture to get that nitrogen to work every time, or is that a challenge?
Year by year, once again. Last year was a little bit of a challenge. We were quite a bit drier in June, but we did end up getting some moisture, I guess. The dews are heavy up here in the mornings most of the time, and that's almost enough to take it in then, I believe.
You know, I think about where you're farming in North Dakota, and I know there's a lot of talk about acres shifting this year. Is it going to be a bigger wheat year for you, or are you shifting crops around on your farm?
You know, we're shifting a few things around. I guess we even went back to a little bit of durum this year instead of just spring wheat, even just due to price wise.
Interesting. How about when you look at things like pinto beans and those kind of things? Do you have contracts available in your area for that as well?
I'm sure there's contracts available. We're pretty far north for the pinto beans and stuff like that. And that, with all our rocks and stuff, makes it a little tougher to grow them.
Yeah, always challenges, no doubt about it. Talking with Andy up in North Dakota. Andy, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today, and good luck to you here heading into the spring.
Yeah, thanks, Darren. You have a good one.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Janelle, if you can help me out with that. We've got Nick on with us right now up in Saskatoon. Nick, how are you doing today?
Oh, not bad. Yourself?
We're doing pretty good down here. We got warm. We were like 70 degrees Fahrenheit here for a couple of days, and now all of a sudden we're getting back to reality. But what's it like? What kind of spring are you getting up there?
Well, we thought it was going to be an early spring, and then we had about 4 inches of fresh snow came yesterday, so that put a damper on things. But I think it's good to have the snow covered ground. It keeps the ground from drying out, I guess, and keeps us from not being in such a rush, I guess, either. And yeah,
I like the positives. I know if we had 4 inches of snow on the ground here, I know my brother would be pulling all his hair out. He's ready to get going, but. We've got wind. We've got wind for a couple of days, maybe just a little skiff of rain, and hopefully we'll be in by the end of this week. And, you know, when you look at what the wheat crops look like, I mean, what are things looking like? Do you have any fall seeded crops up there, or is everything going in the spring?
No, everything in the spring here. Pretty much everybody does everything in the spring up here. And yeah, we've just done that all our life, and that's what we keep doing, I guess.
So what does the nitrogen program look like then on spring seeded wheat?
Every year we work off our soil tests, what's available, I guess, and what we need to do. But what we've typically been doing is half urea with the drill, and then half come in half with top dress later on with UAN.
Okay, so talk to us about that top dress program. Are you using stream bars, or how are you doing things?
Yes, with Chafer stream bars. We're coming in at the jointing stage, and this year I think we're going to put on about a good 20 gallons across all of our wheat. It was pretty short on end, so we're going to put on about 20 gallons plus, and it's a big job, but it seems to be working out every year, so we keep doing it.
Do you put anything else in there? Are you using a stabilizer or using any sulfur or micros or anything like that at that time, or is it just a straight nitrogen shot?
We've played around with adding sulfur before, and it didn't see any response. But if our soil test was black in the sulfur, we definitely would. But as of now, no, we're not. We're just running straight UAN. We keep a pallet of agrotane on the tanker at all times. And if it's going to rain the next day, we won't put it in. If it's going to be dry, we will put it in. So it's kind of up in the air. It depends on that day when we're doing it, what we feel like, what the forecast is going to do, I guess, and go from there. It's usually about half agrotained and half not.
Okay. How about, you know, you mentioned your timing, that you're trying to get stuff around jointing. Have you tried any late applications? Have you found anything that can really trick the wheat into being a little higher protein, or is there any secret there?
No, we haven't. We've always stuck with that timing. I guess we're just maybe worried of hurting the flag leaf if we got too late. As you know, it gets out of stage quick, you know, stuff happens quick up here, I guess, and so we try to stay at that jointing stage and try to keep that flag leaf clean, I guess, if we don't have to hurt him if he's out, so try to keep him clean. And yeah,
as far as acres go this spring, then, are you shifting things around as you're sitting there watching the snow melt, or are you changing, or are you kind of sticking with the plan?
So far sticking with the plan. See how things go, I guess. We're actually cleaning wheat today on our farm. We got a mobile cleaner we built ourselves, and we clean our own wheat here. So we're doing that today. And I think so far we're going to keep with the original plan we had in the fall, I guess, and go from there.
Well, Nick, it's great talking to you today. Stay safe, and good luck going into this planting season.
All righty. Thanks a lot.
You know, when you look at wheat, getting that nitrogen out is so important. And we're talking today about stream barring in wheat and how you could spoon feed that wheat a little bit, at least with another in-crop application. We're also taking your calls and questions. If you'd like to get into that wheat nitrogen discussion, or if you want to talk about something else happening on your farm, that's fine with us. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can email us, radio@agphd.com. We'll be right back after this.
Hey. Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic herbicides from Atticus LLC. Tough broadleaf weeds are a hassle, but they're no match for Cavallo from Atticus. Cavallo delivers fast, contact, and residual control so your corn, soybean, and sorghum crops can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit atticusllc.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Challenging field conditions often make harvest difficult. Can your corn head handle it? The GTS X10 corn head from Agra US is a rugged, cost-effective alternative to heavier, more traditional heads. Constructed of durable yet lightweight aluminum, the X10 puts less strain on your combine without losing harvest effectiveness. And it is 40% lighter than traditional heads, reducing field compaction in those less than ideal conditions. For more information, give us a call at 833-4-AGRA-US.
This is a seed bag. This bag is made of craft paper with a cellophane liner and provides nothing for seed growth. This is a seed bed. It was prepared with Case IH soil management tools. It optimizes everything from nutrient access to water infiltration to create the perfect environment for early uniform emergence. Get to know why your seed bed drives productivity at caseih.com/soil management.
Before it's too late and white mold becomes a problem, you need to ask your seed dealer for Heads Up seed treatment. When raising soybeans in the Midwest, you know the risk of being caught unprepared. As heard on AgPhD, there are several steps you can take prior to planting for a successful management plan against white mold. Compatible and cost-effective season-long protection starts now by asking your seed dealer to apply Heads Up to your 2020 bean seed order. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today, talking about stream barring in wheat and taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Real happy to have Phil Needham on with us right now with Needham Ag Technologies, one of the experts on wheat around the world. Phil, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Hey, Darren. How are you doing, sir?
We're doing quite well. We're talking stream barring today, and already we're getting some questions from listeners in different parts of the country saying, okay, tell me about these stream bars, and what should I look for if I want to get set up to put stream bars on for my operation? Are there any real keys that you've got, any types of equipment or watch-outs you would have?
So really the core of the stream bars really came about 30 plus or minus years ago when I came over to this country from England. And obviously, I was familiar with raising 120, 150, 180 bushel wheat on fields over there, but the growing season is cooler and longer. But there's a lot of opportunities over here to increase yields. And we recognized early on that getting nitrogen on at the right time, in the right form, evenly and accurately, was some pretty important factors to help increase wheat yields in this country. So the stream bars really fitted that niche because a farmer can use a sprayer that he's already got. He can put the Schaefer stream bars on the sprayer to evenly apply liquid N vertically down into the canopy with very little scorch unless it's windy. So it's really a tool to be able to deliver liquid N to the crop at the stages required by the health of the crop in a form that's available relatively quickly, evenly and accurately across the field. So that's kind of the start, I guess.
Yeah, as you travel around the world, Phil, I know you're talking wheat and helping growers and operations around the world over the years. Are farmers in other areas using stream bars as well?
I would say a lot of people are around the world. Depends on the country and the areas. You know, some countries like Australia don't have access to liquid N at a cost-effective price like a lot of producers do across North America. Most times in North America, the cost of UAN compared to liquid is normally within a penny either way. Sometimes the UAN's cheaper, but there are some countries out there that flat out don't produce the UAN domestically, so that creates a challenge getting UAN, as you can imagine.
You mentioned the timing being so critical with these in-season applications of nitrogen. Is there a certain timing? We were talking with Andy up in North Dakota earlier, and he said, you know, I'm trying to get it out there by jointing. Is there a timing that you would say would be good?
So Andy's right on the money for spring wheat country. Yes, we like to see it on by jointing stage. Now, I'm in winter wheat country, so a lot of the producers I work with are winter wheat, but I've got spring wheat producers also. But if we're winter wheat producers, we really encourage a split application of N, in which the first application goes on in the spring around the green-up stage, and the rate of that nitrogen application will be dictated by the health of the crop and the number of plants or number of tillers combined. So if you've got a later planted field without a lot of tillers, plant health isn't great, that's a situation where you need more nitrogen at green up. If you've got a situation where the wheat is planted early, lots of residual nitrogen from the previous crop, good plant health, lots of tillers, that would be an environment where we hold off with the nitrogen or put less on right there at green up and come back with that second shot at jointing stage or a little after. So we always encourage the split application of N in the spring, but the first and the second application rates are dictated by the health of the crop, the number of plants, the number of tillers.
How about other nutrients? Are there other nutrients going on at the same timing with the stream bar, or is stream bar mainly just for N?
So depending on the region, we're still seeing some sulfur deficiencies. If we've got sulfur deficiencies that become apparent in crop, meaning a year like this one, when we had a lot of rain early and then it turned off dry, we're seeing some yellower hillsides that we've tested in the past that show up just deficient in sulfur because their organic matter is lower and there's less mineralization of sulfur and other nutrients. So if we run into spring sulfur deficiencies, we definitely like to put some ATS in with the liquid N and stream it on. But more and more all the time, most of my growers, if not all of them, are putting some FOS in the row at seeding time. We like the MESZ that's got some sulfur, so we're getting some sulfur, a little bit of zinc too, in with the FOS in the row with the seed at seeding time. And that's pretty much eliminating most of our sulfur deficiencies, unless it's on some really eroded hillsides or some sandier, you know, low CEC soils in a high rainfall environment. Those may be exceptions where we do go ahead and put some ATS in with the UAN.
One of the questions that we get from growers as we talk about this subject of getting nitrogen out there is, well, I've been broadcasting the N, and sure, we see a little bit of leaf burn, but it's been a good way for them to get it out with equipment they already have. Do you see a big yield difference switching to the stream bars?
So we do replicated trials every year looking at different inputs, and we've done replicated research on wheat nitrogen applications for many years. And the standard check in all of the protocols is spraying UAN over the top with flat fan nozzles. And that's the big no-no. You just get huge amounts of leaf desiccation. You know, you burn the leaves, you stunt the plants, you hurt the yields every time we've ever done that. And it depends on the yield potential, but it generally takes 6 to 10 bushels per acre off the yield potential if you spray UAN over the top of a green growing canopy. So the next best option is either the 3, 5, or 7-hole nozzles, streamer caps as they're called. They're better than spraying it, but they're really height dependent. Plus, they create fine droplets that do still scorch the canopy and still cause a yield reduction. In almost all of the trials, almost every year, the stream bars are on top just because you're delivering the end vertically downwards. They're not height dependent like the nozzle caps I've previously described. And the stream bars operate at low pressure to basically dribble large droplets vertically down into the canopy, and you get very little leaf scorch, again, unless it's windy. Now, if the wind's blowing 10, 15, 20 mile an hour and you're driving 15 mile an hour into that headwind, you're going to get scorched, there's no doubt. So we prefer not to do it on windy days. But if it's not too windy, you don't get much scorch with the stream bars. And the stream bars just produce the least amount of scorch, and that's what you want. You don't want to scorch those valuable leaves, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one last follow-up question here I've got for you. You'd mentioned before with your timing on the winter wheat, and we've got certainly a number of acres out there and growers that are listening, and you mentioned the health and the tiller count on that first app at Green Up is going to be really important. What do you shoot for? What kind of tiller count do you like to see?
So I like to step backwards. So at harvest time in most regions that have got adequate rainfall, if you're into dry areas of western Kansas, western Oklahoma, it's going to descend down from these. But if you're in an area with adequate rainfall where you can raise good wheat for your area, you know, we normally search for 500 to 600 heads per square yard at harvest time. That's kind of the magical range. And some people are below that hurts them. Some people are much higher than that. Then they've got lodging problems and disease issues and other problems. But 500 to 600 is really what we seek. So if you can go into spring with 200 or 250 healthy plants, and every plant has a main stem and a tiller, or main stem and 1.5 tillers on average, you'd be in that 500 to 600 range that we're searching for maximum yields, okay?
Yep, excellent stuff. We're talking with Phil Needham here, and if you want to find out more about Phil and what he's up to, check out Needham Ag Technologies. Great stuff as always. Thank you so much, Phil, and good luck going into the spring.
All right, and you guys. Thank you, Darren.
You bet, thanks. Talking about stream barring in wheat and also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
We planted early February, we have all good emergence. So far, we can't find any condition that the wheels haven't worked. I can just say that.
Closing the seed trench behind the planter is essential to establishing yields in the fall. Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer who is tired of seeing poor stands because of uneven emergence, the Germinator is here to give your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. For more information, visit us at farmshopmfg.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds.
Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty, along with my brother Darren, we're live in the Morton studio today. If you've got a question for us, 844-44-AG-PHD, you can give us a call. That's what Gary did. He is calling from up in Canada. Hey, Gary, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Excellent. So I hear you want to fix your saline soils. You've been reading Neil Kinsey's book, and you have some questions. What can we do for you?
Yes. We've identified our saline areas. We're talking high magnesium, high sodium, high CEC.
Sounds about right.
We've
yep.
ripped these areas, deep ripped them,
okay.
tiled them. If I understand this book right, we need to apply some lime to bring the calcium up. And then we also have lots of sulfur there. Once our soil is able to drain properly, the sulfur should take some magnesium out, but we need to have lots of calcium there to start with for that to happen.
What is your base saturation percentage on calcium?
I'm extrapolating here because the lab we use gives us different results than what Kinsey's would, but I'm going to say right around that 60%.
Yeah, that's not terrible. So if it was 40%, I'd be thinking a little bit differently. But at 60%, that it's not a complete disaster. How high is the sodium? So are we actually dealing with a sodic soil here or a saline soil? That's kind of where I'm going. How high is that sodium?
4%.
Okay.
And up a bit, maybe. But
sure.
They technically call it a saline sodic,
yep.
but I don't think we're sodic. We don't have that blocky structure to it. We just don't have, it's like a hard panel almost. When you get a rain, the water just pools on top.
Sure. The thing is, you're heading toward, or you were at least, heading toward becoming a sodic soil. So I'm glad that you're addressing it now. That's great. And I'm curious, how high are these sulfur levels that you talk about? Are we 1,000 parts per million, or where are we at?
Times 5.
5,000. Okay. So my...
That's just in the surface.
All right. And when did the ripping and tiling get done?
The fall of 18.
Fall of 18. How was your crop in 2019? Did you see some improvement?
We did. I would attribute some of that to what we did and some of that to starting dry and then having timely rainfall to
sure.
do a little bit of washing of salt for us.
Yeah, yep. Well, where I'm going with this is if it's me and I have that much sulfur, I might just give it a little bit of time. Because what very well could happen here, Gary, is that sulfur could end up binding with some of that magnesium and sodium, creating salts that will flush out of your soil. When those start flushing out of your soil, then your calcium percentage is going to go up, and your percentage of magnesium and sodium are going to go down. So if you want to send us your soil test, then I'll take a look at them, and I can to some degree confirm this. But if I had a soil like you have just described to me, and you've said you've ripped it, you've tiled it, I might just let it sit. What I would probably do, though, I mean, obviously, I want to fertilize accordingly for whatever crop I'm trying to raise. Try to raise the best crop you can, but I don't think I'm going to be adding any lime at this point. I think I'd just let it settle out, and hopefully with natural rainfall here over the next few years, you'll see your magnesium and your sodium levels start to drop. So I'm glad you started to see some progress in 2019. It takes some time when things are that high. I mean, that sulfur level is, yeah, really high. The magnesium high, sodium high. I mean, we got some things that need to start flushing out of our soil, and it will. It takes some time.
Now, what do you know about these soil conditioners? Neil Kinsey mentions them, but he doesn't say what a soil conditioner is. But he says it'll open things up yep. very nicely so that it starts draining properly.
Yeah, and that would be something you could certainly try. So, but with that calcium level already at 60%, you're not in bad shape. If your calcium level was 30, 40%, something like that, I would say, yeah, maybe you should add a little bit of lime or gypsum or something like that. Just get some more calcium out there somehow, some way. But at 60%, no, I agree. You could try one of those soil conditioners, but it sounds to me like you've already been working on conditioning your soil with the ripping and the tiling, and hopefully that starts to improve. And since your sodium level wasn't ridiculously high, I'm not super worried. So when we get to what we call a sodic soil and that sodium level starts to get much higher, you know, you start talking 6, 7, 10% or more for sodium. Now that it seems like that soil really tightens up, to your point earlier, and that's where the soil conditioners seem to have more benefit, but you could certainly try it in this.
So what is a soil conditioner?
Okay, so I'll just give you an example. There is a company we work with called Precision Labs here in the United States, and I believe they do a bunch of stuff in Canada as well. But anyway, they sell a product, and I don't remember the name of the product off the top of my head, to golf courses. Where if you've, and I'm not a golfer or anything, but sometimes you'll be on greens where they're watering it every day, they're cutting it every day, and they get hard spots and to the point where the water won't even soak in. And so the soil conditioners somehow loosen the tension of that soil. I don't know exactly how to describe that, but all I can say is this is a proven thing. And in those types of spots, well, then they get stuff actually moving down in the soil. So there are plenty of companies that make those kind of products, and maybe off air or something, we can hopefully give you a little more guidance on that, or I can look up the name of the Precision product. But anyway, there are soil conditioners out there sold by many different companies.
And you don't know what the active ingredient is, though?
Off the top of my head, I don't remember. Nope.
Okay, fair enough. Okay.
Okay. All right.
That answers my question.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
You bet. Thanks, Gary. Appreciate it. All right. Let's head next down to Texas. We got Carl calling in down there. Hey, Carl, how are you?
Oh, I guess I'm all.
Now, I heard you are concerned about your corn that took 3 weeks to emerge, and now you got a spotty stand. Is that correct?
Yeah, and it seems like you get a little bit more corn all the time.
Yep.
And, I mean, we're within 2 days of a month being in the ground.
Yeah. Now I realize in Texas that's a tremendously long time. For me, I'm perfectly okay with that. We're going to plant some corn on Friday. The soil temp will be 40 degrees, maybe 45, and it will take 3 to 4 weeks for our corn to get out of the ground.
Yeah, Carl, he is a little bit crazy on the early side, but we end up with a short season.
Yeah.
Our challenge is we get about 2 or 3 weeks, and we run out of the best time of year to get it in, and we start losing yield really fast. Now, you've got corn still popping up is what you were saying, though, so there's more stand
still,
coming.
Yeah. Okay, so
I dry ground. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Carl, I'll just tell you the things that we talk about here in the cold climate we've got. So one of the things you want to look at is not just the regular germination test. We got a lot of farmers now just taking samples of their seed corn before they plant it, sending it in for analysis to get a saturated cold germination test. Mm-hmm. And we want to have a higher test there. But in terms of popping the seed out more quickly, because it sounds like it's uneven. So in order to do that, the first and most important thing is making sure that planter is adjusted super well. And I will be honest, we've sucked at that on our farm. We have not done a good enough job. Yeah. And we are finally now, I think, getting a lot better.
The corn that was in at the right depth,
yep,
is the slowest coming up. Now, I had a spot or two as you walk down the row. You'll find, well, that plant's up great. Well, it was only an inch in the ground.
Yeah.
And I know that's not good.
Right.
But we've had 12 inches of rain on it.
Yep.
Over the last month.
Yep. Gotcha.
And so the high spots, tops of terraces, they're fine.
Sure.
But the flatter you get and stuff, the worse it is. And, you know, 2 weeks ago, it wasn't any big deal. It's going to be plowed up. But now you think, it's still coming, but I know better because them late ones are going to turn into weeds and they ain't going to make nothing.
Well, to some degree, but I would just tell you this. We've had some pretty uneven emergence in the past. It still doesn't turn out too bad. You just have to weigh that out. Now, where you're at, you can probably get by with this. For us, a lot of times, we're planting real late. I mean, it gets to June, and you go, I just don't think that I can do it there. Carl, if you want to hold on a little bit more, we'll talk a little more about your issue right after this.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or Water Hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Hey Adam, new drone?
Not just any drone.
I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree.
In the power lines. Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren. Right before the break, we were talking to Carl from down in Texas, and he just said he had an uneven stand. And I was going to go through the things that we usually look for when we see that uneven emergence out there. So the number one thing, like I was mentioning, is the planter. We want to make sure that planter is in good shape and very consistently having the same depth. So Carl had just made the comment that, yep, some of the plants that were a little more shallow, they came up earlier. That's absolutely to be expected. But that doesn't mean that we want to plant all our plants at 1 inch. Like he said, he understands 1 inch planting depth, probably not real good, and it's not. We want that planting depth, like on our farm, we like to be 2 to 2.25 inches deep, something like that. But we just need consistency, consistent depth, consistent spacing, consistent downforce or down pressure. Basically, we want good seed to soil contact, and hopefully we can pop those seeds out of the ground at the same time. Now, to speed emergence, the things you can do, great seed treatment. So like on our farm, we're using 33 different treatments on the seed corn, and most seed companies only put about 4 on there. So we're using 33 that absolutely helps speed emergence roughly 10 to 20%. A little bit of in-furrow fertilizer, not a lot, but just a little pop-up fertilizer, that's great. Just keep the rate really low. Keep. We just talked about this yesterday a little bit on the show. Use some water along with it to safen it. Use a low-salt product to safen it. But, I mean, a little bit of in-furrow fertilizer will help pop the seed out of the ground quicker, usually 10 to 20% also. Then I would take a look at in-furrow insecticide and in-furrow fungicide. We have found when planting in cold conditions, those two things really pay, especially like Carl was saying, when seeds got to sit there for 3 weeks, maybe even like on our farm, sit there for 4 weeks, it's a lot of time for disease and insects to attack it. So if you do those things, then usually we see faster stands, we see more consistent stands. And yeah, Carl, we're certainly used to that here in the northern United States, these uneven stands. We just have been really working over the years to do a better job because we want to plant early. Our first planting date is Friday. Our first planting date for crop insurance is April 10th. So we're planting on Friday, and that soil's going to be really cold.
See, our final planting date is like Easter.
Sure.
And everybody that planted on the 10th and 11th of March has got to replant corn. It's a lot of it's worse than mine. And so it doesn't matter varieties. It doesn't matter. I mean, these guys got precision planters. It's all about water.
Yeah.
Too much water.
Yep, yep.
And so now I got 200 acres out of 2,000 planted, and our final planting date's Easter.
Yep.
And all of Northeast Texas, there's probably going to be 100,000 acres of corn that don't get planted because of that.
Yeah. Oh, and that's too bad. Yeah. I mean,
we plant late.
Yeah. We went through that last year. And yeah, the challenge with planting late down there is it gets awfully hot a lot of times when your corn's going to be at tassel. So it's really debatable what a guy wants to do. And as far as replanting some of these inconsistent stands, you know, a lot of times if it's getting near the last plant date, I'm still looking at it going, hey, if I've got at least 2/3 of a stand, I'm probably just going to leave it. Because by the time I do the work of replanting everything else, I'll have a better stand. But a lot of times later planting here, at least, means lower yield. For you, you know, it all depends. Yeah. Are we going to have a hot summer, cold summer? When are we going to get the rain? I mean, it's really hard to know. So we certainly feel for you.
Oh, yeah. Just one rain at the right time, everything's fine.
Yep.
But I'm just not worried about the corn being stunted and not, you know, just. So I've seen early corn before, and this is 113-day corn.
Sure.
But I've seen a little earlier corn than that. If it gets screwed up right now, that stuff won't be 5 foot tall and the ear will be touching the ground when it makes an ear.
Yeah.
They revert back to like a short parent or something. And they get stressed kind of like this. I've seen it too many times, and so that's what makes me really worried about even leaving it.
Yeah. Yep. I know. I wish I had the perfect advice for you, Carl. It's really a crapshoot. We just don't know for sure based on what the weather is going to be. But all I know is this. If I've got most of a stand out there, I'm probably going to leave it. And hopefully things will dry out here for you in the next few days. But, yeah, you don't have a lot of days to go before your last plant date. So we certainly wish you the best, Carl.
There's about 70% chance of rain Saturday, so we might just be screwed.
All right. Well, sorry to hear that, Carl. Thanks for calling in today. And if you want to call us back a little bit later on this summer, let us know how it turns out. We'd love to hear from you.
Okay, thanks.
You bet. Thanks, Carl. Let's go next to Nebraska. We got Bill on with us. Hey, Bill, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you guys?
Great. So what can we do for you today?
Well, I guess my question is about boron application. We farm in some sandier soils with corn and soybeans is what we grow, and some of our farms come back with soil tests as low as 0.2, 0.3.
Yeah.
And I think you've answered a question of mine in the past where I've tried to blend with phosphorus and potash, and it just doesn't seem to do the job.
Nope.
So you kind of recommend going out there with boron by itself. But
yes.
I guess my biggest question would be, how much does a guy actually want to apply to that low of a soil test, you know, as far as if I'm using like 15% boron product?
Sure. Okay. So I'll tell you just a few things with that. First of all, most people really panic when they hear us say, we want you to use some boron on your crop, because they think boron is super toxic, and it can be if you overdo it. So the key things we're looking for are, do you have good calcium levels, and how heavy is your soil? If your soil is really light, then so the cation exchange capacity is low, then you have to spoon feed that boron a little bit. So if you talk to a lot of the really high yield guys, they might be putting boron on half a dozen times throughout the course of the season on super light soils. And it's easy to do because you can run it through the pivot, you can run it through subsurface irrigation, you can put it on side dress, you can put it on a little bit foliar. I mean, there are lots of ways to do this thing. But if you're asking me and you say, okay, I got, let's call it medium textured soils, and I've got good levels of calcium over 60-65%, I would tell you in a broadcast, I'm probably going to feel fairly comfortable in the range of 1 to 3 actual pounds of boron out there in a broadcast. Now, last year, like on our farm where we've got some medium to even heavy soil and good calcium levels, we had some guys, some of these high yield guys had plots on our farms, and a couple of them banded over the row 2 actual pounds of boron. So that's a lot of boron, and I thought, well, I don't know. We'll see how that turns out, but you could absolutely see it in their tissue levels all season long. So I don't know exactly. I hate to tell you an exact recommendation without looking at your soil tests, but I will just say broadcast, you can feel fairly comfortable if you've got a fair amount of calcium out there. When you start banding right over the row, I'd be experimenting before I'm doing a crazy amount of acres or anything like that. But yeah, when you're at 0.2, 0.3 parts per million on boron, as long as you've got NPK, sulfur, those kind of things right, the odds are pretty high you would see some kind of response from applying some boron out there.
Okay. And what is it the boron actually does for the plant?
Well, boron is really important in flowering with a lot of the plants. So almost every crop out there, when it gets to flowering, it seems like the nutrient needs go up in that plant. And one of the other big things, like with corn, is filling out the end of the ear. Quite often when we see corn that's not filled out to the tip, guys will say, well, I probably planted just a little too thick. And that's been the old story for years and years and years. But in reality, it's most likely a nutrient deficiency, and quite commonly, it's boron.
I see.
All right.
I understand. I guess that was the main question I had for you, so I appreciate it very much. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, you bet. And in terms of this boron, and I was just saying there are lots of different ways to apply it out there, and Bill specifically asked about 15% boron, maybe because that's what we've been doing some of on our farm. We've done a lot of broadcasting of boron. We're getting our levels up, but we have heavier soil. The lighter your soil, the less chance you have to hold that boron in the soil very long. So if I've got light soil, then I'm thinking a lot more about banding. I'm thinking a lot more about adding some as the season progresses. There are a lot of guys I talk to that say, yep, I'm making three passes over the field. Every time I go across, I'm going to add some boron. So I would just suggest you try a few different things, but get those boron levels up and then kind of verify it with plant tissue analysis to see how you turned out.
And I think the other thing too, Brian, is I know sometimes we hear about something a little different. Oh, here's something a little different. I haven't been working on boron. If we don't have N, P, and K and those big building blocks in place, or we're not doing a great job, you know, placing the seed and getting good even emergence, all those kinds of things, our chances of winning with something like that are less. So make sure you have those things in place as well when you get started. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.